Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back with hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine this morning. I'm Lynette here along with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon answering your questions. 1-800-465-8770. We're headed to Shelton. Paul is on the line for us. Good morning, Paul.
Well, good morning.
I'm
going to start taking some red yeast rice enhanced with CoQ10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's longevity. I'm a longevity patient.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a appointment coming up with my GP, and I'm sure he's going to want to know what the equivalent of that red yeast rice is to lovastatin.
Okay, well, actually, lovastatin is what is in red yeast rice. That's how lovastatin was invented.
Is it 500 milligrams, though, of dosage-wise?
That's right.
Same, well, or is it different?
It's a low dose. I don't remember the exact milligram equivalents. So what we have found is people who don't tolerate the commercial lovastatin often tolerate the red yeast rice quite nicely and get good cholesterol lowering. So,
okay.
Yeah, but I wish I could give you an exact number, but I really don't have it memorized.
Okay. Is that something that he could get a hold of you about?
He probably could, yeah. In fact, hang on a second. Okay. Samira is looking up a dose. So, let's see. Levels of lovastatin vary in the product. 2.4 grams of red yeast rice daily may contain about 4.8 milligrams of lovastatin. Or about
2.4 grams
of red yeast rice contain about 4.8 milligrams of lovastatin. That is about 0.2% of the total dose.
So 4 grams of red yeast rice equals...
No, 2.4.
Okay, 2.4
grams of red yeast rice contain about 4.8 milligrams... of lovastatin.
Okay. Got it. 2.4 grams equals 4.8.
Yeah, but you're going from grams to milligrams, okay?
Milligrams. Yes. Yes, I understand that.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Okay, well.
Very good.
Thank Dr. Umat and her flying fingers.
Yes, on the computer.
Oh. Fingers. That's right.
You got it. Well, and I'm surprised her fingers are flashing because after our party last night, she went out drinking and dancing.
Yes, indeed. I did indeed.
Yes. Oh, I bet she was the belle of the ball.
Okay.
Oh, it was so nice. And there were so many of our team there. It was fun.
Very good. Next year we'll have pictures.
Well, there are pictures this year, too.
Okay, we'll have even more pictures. Hey, Paul, thank you so much for your call. I'm sure that has given some other folks some good information, too. Red yeast rice is what we're talking about with Paul. All right, going to Tacoma. Good morning. We have Casey on the line with a question for the doctors.
Well, good morning, doctors. It's great to speak with you.
Good morning, Casey.
My wife.
Yeah, how can we help?
Hi. Well, my wife has a sister who a number of years ago was told by her general practitioner that he thought that she had Parkinson's. And he placed her on Parkinson's medication. And this has been about 10 years. Well, just last fall, a neurologist told her, oh, no, you don't have Parkinson's.
Oops.
However, in the meantime, she's been taking this medication. Mm-hmm. And my wife, her sister, can describe that course of treatment better than I, and she's here. So
my name is Vera.
Hello, Vera.
Hi, Vera.
My sister. Hi. My sister suffered a relatively mild tremor after her husband of 50 years died suddenly of a heart attack. So that's when she went to the doctor, and he said, I would bet my life you have Parkinson's, and put her on Parkinson's medications of various types. She had suffered horribly under the different medications, and they would always be changed, and she had body contortions. She had scoliosis. Her tremors increased horribly. And now, after all these years, they said, oh, you don't have Parkinson's. And I said to the neurologist, because I went with her, so a lot of these symptoms are described as side effects of Parkinson's medications. And she said, there is no test to prove it. And she's in terrible shape.
And unlike the neurologist, I don't know of any test to prove whether or not any set of symptoms are due to the medication other than a therapeutic trial. Obviously, if you're having the symptoms while taking the medicine, you stop taking the medicine and the symptoms go away, then that's kind of a...
Oh, they would change the medicine, that's case. All.
Yeah. But the problem, of course, is that sometimes when you assault a relatively healthy elderly brain, and I presume if she'd been married 50 years, she had received a certain degree of maturity. Because she was probably in her 70s or early 80s by then. Those medications, she's now increasing the dopamine assault on her brain. Her dopamine receptors at this point have probably become very, very hyposensitive. When you have a receptor in your anywhere in your body, and you add the chemical to which that receptor is sensitive, the receptor becomes less and less sensitive to the receptor or to the chemical. And so they've probably seriously downregulated the dopamine receptors in her brain to dopamine, and now she probably doesn't have enough dopamine to handle what she needs. So
the neurologist said,
go ahead.
The neurologist said, and we have no medicine to help you.
And he's right.
Yeah, that's such a sad story. So I presume she's been taken off of those drugs now?
She is on no medication at all.
None. Okay.
Anymore.
And what are her symptoms now?
Well, she walks very slowly. She does not have the typical Parkinson's, you know, toes first walk. Mm-hmm. She walks very slowly. She is weak. Mm-hmm. Her voice is barely audible. Her right hand has a much severe tremor, periodically uncontrollable, and then she'll stop. And her left hand will tremor too. She has to eat like over a bowl or over a plate because she can't hold things. It is absolutely tragic.
And how old is she now?
She's 82.
Okay. I mean, some of that...
And she's a very small person.
Yeah. Some of that is rather classic aging. Many people that have not had the wrong medications added by their early 80s are slow and weak and have, you know, essential tremors. So the question is, how do you sort out which of her current symptoms are due to advanced age? Because she is...
I can tell you that she has always been very physically active, and yes, this slowness only occurred from the medicine.
I believe you. I'm just saying, how would you prove it?
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference in what... there's a big difference in what you know and what you can prove to someone in, in an objective setting. And unfortunately, we have no way of proving it, because there are a significant number of people by their low 80s who have all of the symptoms she's describing that occur naturally. And then there are people like her who would not have developed those symptoms, but have had them triggered by the misapplication of a medication. And, you know, how do we know for sure that she would not have developed these by this age, as many people do?
Well, among all of our six siblings, she's the only one in this horrible condition.
Yes. And I, again, you know, I'm not doubting it. I think it probably is true. I just have absolutely no way to prove it.
And there's no help.
Yeah.
No, there isn't.
So
how long has she been off the medication now, though?
About 6 months.
Okay. Here's the kind of good news. The best I can offer you for good news here is that once you stop attacking the receptors with extra medication, with extra stimulants, they will often reset themselves over time. But it may take a year or more for her to get back her normal sensitivity of the receptors. So
we were wondering about that.
Yeah, so it is possible that her receptors will reset and become more normally sensitive to what her natural dopamine production is within a year or so. The downside,
that's
of course,
helpful.
Is that over the last 10 years, naturally, her dopamine production would have been declining anyway because she's getting old. There are times, young lady, that I feel an urge to apologize for my entire profession because, you know, doctors being human beings, and human beings are flawed creatures who make mistakes. And her primary care doctor may well have been, you know, the cause of her issues.
And he's retired, of course.
Yeah, of course. No. Well, and
do you think longevity could help
her?
Do you think longevity could help her?
I don't know. We can try. You know, there are things we can do that even in real Parkinson's patients improve their condition, who can make them stronger, more durable, able to walk and stand and move more easily. So it is certainly within the realm of possibility, but we're kind of working against against odds right now just because of what she's undergone.
Right. And, you know, a lot of our program depends upon the patient being able to take initiative and follow a routine. And if she's not able to apply the creams or do her part of it, she's not going to get the results that we hope for her as well. So I don't want to say no, but I it's very difficult to say.
It'd be one of those things we'd have to bring her in and evaluate her, do some testing, and then make up our mind whether we thought there was a reasonable chance we could help or not.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Aww.
Thank you so
Sorry
much.
Sorry to give you bad news. Bye-bye, dear.
Yes. Good luck.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both for the call.
You know, time and age are all against her, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So.
They are.
And not knowing what was time and age or what was caused by the medications that she was taking.
Right. Wow. I mean, I guess they could wait for another 6 months or so and see what her baseline is. And if the baseline has improved, then they want to come and see us at that time and see if we can help.
Perhaps the downside is, though, that once you're in your mid-80s, many people go downhill at an ever-accelerating rate.
That is very true.
And so,
wow. We hear the music. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Susan and John. And we have room for your phone call as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine, live in the studio on a Saturday morning, and we're glad you're here, and we love it when you tune in. Here is that number to ask your question of the doctors, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Stay there. Start me up. Woo! Mick Jagger's still going at what, 80?
I know.
80,
what,
I think.
What was it Dr. Nelson was saying? He's going to his concert?
Yes.
Did he say something like that?
I think he did. We were talking about.
Yeah, we were talking about Mick Jagger.
Pretty amazing. They're still rocking, and good on them.
I know.
I love that.
Well, during the Christmas holidays, Barry Manilow was on TV, and I was watching him sing those songs that, you know.
I remember going to his concerts.
God, he's still going strong. And that voice is so incredible.
Yes.
What a gift.
Keeps his voice, and it's just beautiful. Yeah. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Samira Umat. My name is Lynette, and we're headed to the phones. Susan is on the line from Tacoma. Hi there, Susan. How can we help?
Hi, good morning. I spoke with Dr. last week, and he mentioned a pain formula, a pain medicine with testosterone for my knee, and I can't remember it, and I did not write it down. Could you tell me what that is? I have a meniscal tear.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Susan. Was that big, giant, because you had osteoarthritis, and was it PRP? That they were putting.
Yes, we talked about that. That's me.
Okay, that is you. I've got your problem and the fact that he was explaining PRP, but I did not write down what he said would be good for that. Perhaps Dr. Mixon will know. Dr. Mixon, you were gone last week on the beach in Hawaii.
Yes, I was.
We had Susan call in, and she was talking with Dr. Dan Nelson about her osteoarthritis and her meniscus tear, and he had mentioned some type of medicinal thing with testosterone.
You know, I can't remember.
PRP that he used.
Certainly he uses PRP all the time, and PRP is helpful, and with PRP he does stem cell therapies to help decrease the inflammation in the joint itself. But I don't know if he prescribes some medications with that.
I didn't remember what he said, but I do remember that he said it could be compounded in the pharmacy, and it was like a cream that you could rub on, right?
Well,
I
tell my patients to rub their testosterone cream on the joint. That'll really help with the pain, because testosterone is a anabolic hormone. It's a healing and repair hormone. And then the other thing that we do in our clinic is send off for a KetoCam cream. We basically have the compounding pharmacist compounded, and we put a muscle relaxant, a painkiller, and an anti-inflammatory, and depending upon how much pain the patient is having, we can change the amount of what, you know, drug we're needing. If it's more pain, we would put more pain. If it's more inflammation, we would put more anti-inflammatory. If it's muscle spasm, then we put more of an anti-muscle spasm medication, and then we usually have the patient rub that for a few days, and it really helps heal the pain, so they don't have to take pills by mouth.
Yeah. You're just putting the medicine right where it works.
Yeah. It's KetoCam cream.
Do you remember the name of the cream?
KetoCam cream.
Keto with a K?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it needs to be compounded. Is that right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, because the KetoCam stands for ketoprofen and piroxicam.
Yeah.
Those are two non-steroidal anti-inflammatories.
Right.
And so they use that as the base, and then they add the other things, the muscle relaxers, the narcotics or the other anti-inflammatories. But the ketoprofen, piroxicam are the two main base ingredients that everything else just gets added to.
Right.
And would she need her doctor to prescribe that?
She would. Yeah. Okay. But, you know, a good thing would be to call the compounding pharmacist first and get the formula from him or her, and then take that to your doctor.
Yeah.
That'll make it easier for your doctor to write it down.
Because I mentioned that to my physical therapist the other day, and when I said it was a testosterone cream, he was clueless. He said, I'm going to be honest with you. So, and he is not my preferred provider, so I thought I would call you today. And thank you for the information. I had one more question. It's unrelated to this, but it's regarding alkaline water. We buy our water, and it's purified. And we're going back and forth between alkaline water and purified water. What is your take on drinking alkaline water?
I'm not quite sure why you want to turn off your stomach acid. The human stomach produces a very high concentration of hydrochloric acid, and you need that acid in order to absorb iron, calcium, magnesium, sodium, and your B vitamins. And so if you don't have adequate acid in your stomach, you don't absorb any of those things very efficiently. And alkaline water, by definition, is anti-acid. And the biggest problem with older people is not too much acid. It's that we lose our acid as we get older. Mm. And so we become less and less efficient at absorbing the things we need.
Mm.
And so this thing of alkaline water has always kind of boggled my mind. Because it's not going to be alkaline once it hits your stomach. You're going to mix the alkali with the
acid. The stomach.
And just neutralize some of your acid that you need.
Mm-hmm. This is good to know. Thank you. Because we've been getting just the purified, and my husband had read that alkaline could be beneficial. So you answered my question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the people that sell alkaline water want you to buy all the alkaline water you will buy, because the miracle that it performs is on their bank account. All right.
There you go.
Oh, good information. Susan, I hope that's helpful for you. And would you like the number of the compounding pharmacy that we talk about on the show a lot?
Yeah, I would like that. Thank you.
Yeah, because you know what? When your doctor calls them and calls in the prescription, they can actually mail it to you. So that's a good thing. Here's the number. It's called Paramount Pharmacy. And the number to call is 855-301-7677.
And Susan, just tell them that you heard us on the radio show and tell the pharmacist to help you with what kind of KetoCam cream to a prescription, you know, that you can have your doctor write for you. Okay?
Brandon, the owner of the pharmacy, is very, very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's more than happy to educate your doctor.
Right. Yeah. Right. So. Very good. All right. Thank you so much for the call, Susan. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We are going to do a little traveling here to Whidbey Island. John is on the line with us. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a microadenoma on my pituitary gland. I'm a little background. I'm 70. Okay.
John, we've got a bad connection.
Yeah. John, we have a really bad connection. It's echoing all over. Sounds almost like you're on a...
underwater and... Yeah. Are you on a landline or on a cell phone moving?
Well, let me turn off the speaker. Maybe that's it.
That might help.
Is that better?
It's just a little bit louder underwater talking.
Yeah. So you might, tell you what, hang up and call right back and then ask them to just put you right back in with us as soon as possible. Okay.
Okay.
Because you're unintelligible.
Yeah, we can't understand what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. So, John, hang up, call right back, and we will get you in just a moment. We're going to go to Nancy and Roy. Hi there, Nancy. Good morning.
Hi. Oh, always look forward to Saturday mornings for 4 hours of listening to the entertainment and great information.
We're entertaining.
Okay.
Yay.
We have a new skill set, Jerry. Thank you. I love it. I thought I was the most boring person on the planet.
No, not at all.
No, no. It's a good combination. What I'm wondering about is, are you familiar with a drug called darolutamide, which is used for prostate cancer?
Yes.
Can you tell me anything, what you think about it?
Well, I don't use it myself, obviously. I'm not a oncologist or a... what do you call the urologist? Okay.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I just wondered if you'd had any of your patients or anything you knew about it. My dear friend and companion has mm-hmm. been on Lupron for a little over 3 years. He chose not to want to go the radiation and all the other stuff. And it was doing a very, very good job for him. He had some of the female side effects from it.
Sure.
But other than that, we laugh about that a bit. But then his PSA just started going up a bit mm-hmm. near the last winter. And so the oncologist suggested that since he still did not want to do the radiation, the information we received was the only thing the radiation would do for him at that point would be cause his prostate to shrink up because it's quite swollen. So he has a in-place catheter in there. And so he's started on the darolutamide, and they have to do blood work every month. This will be his third month of having the blood draw and checking the kidneys and liver. But we were just curious as if there was anything further that you might be able to tell us about that.
All right. Well, darolutamide is normally used with people that have metastatic prostate cancer. That is, the cancer has already spread to the bones or, you know, remote sites from the prostate. So it's an androgen receptor inhibitor. There's two different things. The Lupron was designed to turn off his ability to make testosterone.
Right.
The darolutamide hits the testosterone receptors so that even if he's making his own androgens, he wouldn't be able to respond to them. And so that's what the drug is all about, and that's how it differs from the Lupron. One decreases the hormone, the other decreases the receptor sensitivity. And the combinations can be used together with metastatic disease. But the question, of course, is, you know, how much cancer does he have? Has it spread? If so, where? It would be unusual
when he had his last, fiddlesticks, I forget what the test was done when he was in the big machine. I don't think that...
MRI?
What was it?
PSA.
When the oncologist had him go for another
imaging study?
I can't remember.
PET scan.
It's one of the scans, uh-huh. a very intensive scan, and though the cancer had not spread outside the prostate, this time the scan went a little bit deeper. And there was a lymph node that showed some activity, but it wasn't anything terribly alarming at this particular point. And the way we understood it was the darolutamide doesn't kill the cancer.
But no, it does not.
It stops it from being able to move on.
Yeah, well, and that depends on the cancer. Tell you what, we're going to take a little break. We got to go with the music, but then I'll come back and tell you about the pros and cons of this sort of therapy, okay?
Okay, you stay right there, Nancy. Nancy, you stay right there. And John is back as well. We'll be talking with him. And then we have a first John and a second John today.
We'll talk. Johns.
Yeah, I know. We just need a Matthew and a Mark to call in. Oh, we already had our Mark. Okay. Looking for a Matthew. Do I hear a Matthew?
And Luke.
And a Luke. Hey, we'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. You stay right there. We're back. Leading Edge Medicine every Saturday morning at this time, taking your calls, talking with you and talking with the doctors here about your health and aging. It is 9:33. We're continuing to talk about prostate cancer and Nancy and the medicine with the big name.
Darolutamide.
The doctors, darolutamide. Yes. The doctors are looking on their computers. They like to get as much information as they can.
There is a third John, you know. There's first, second, and third John.
Yes.
As well as gospel.
That's right.
So we have room for one more John.
I know. I love that.
Okay. What I'm thinking about with him is, by definition, if he's now got a positive node, he has metastatic disease. The cancer has spread. Doesn't sound like it spread very far, but once it's out of the prostate, we now have a metastatic situation.
Okay.
So the question, you know, is where to go from there. The side effects, the symptoms that people get from this darolutamide and from the Lupron can be pretty widespread. They can affect your bone marrow significantly, fatigue, liver disease, all sorts of issues that arise when you block all of your androgen receptors.
Mm-hmm.
The least invasive, I understand he doesn't want radiation because the radiation therapies, they do a good job of killing the cancer, but they also get bowel and bladder damage and a lot of side effects.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do a radiation, I'd say the neutron radiation, which is a very, very precise form that will have minimal damage to the surrounding tissues. But there's also some groups over in Seattle that are now doing a focal laser ablation where they can actually do an MRI with the high frequency, the 3 Tesla MRI machines. MRI, magnetic
resonance imaging.
Magnetic resonance imaging comes in currently two forms, the 1.5 Tesla and then the twice as strong, the newer 3 Tesla machines. The 3 Tesla machines give very, very precise imaging of everything that's in that pelvis. And so it allows them, using a 3 Tesla imager, to go in with the lasers and destroy not just the prostate tissue, but the cancers within the prostate tissue without taking out the whole prostate. And perhaps even hitting that lymph node without doing any further damage. So there's that. That's what I would be looking for right now.
Fred Hutch, probably, Jerry.
Fred Hutch does it, yeah.
Yeah, Fred Hutch Cancer Therapy. They have oncologists. And usually, you know, in a situation like this, you have a team of physicians. There is radiation therapists, there's oncologists, there's your medical provider, there might be a surgeon. So don't be surprised if you have more than one or two people. But Fred Hutch has radiation oncology. They have several providers that are providing this specialized therapy.
We're with Kaiser, and I know that they're willing to send us outside that area if we need to, because I've heard them speak about that before. This isn't the cyber knife that they've been advertising, right?
No, no, it's not.
Okay, Tesla 3, you said?
Well, it's a 3 Tesla MRI.
Okay.
That basically is twice as strong as the older machines, and it gives far more detailed picture of the prostate and the pelvis. So, and they can use that to guide where their therapy is.
Oh, okay. So that's for the imaging and 3 Tesla, okay, MRI. Okay, we'll have to ask. We're seeing the oncologist this coming week, so we'll ask them about that and see if they have anything that's available that we could be looking at.
That's because the medications that he's on are, they do widespread damage to men. To brain function, to bone, to stem cells, everything.
He's been taking his a good supplement with the calcium, magnesium, and they've been checking, and so far his bones look fine. They don't look like they've lost, you know, anything as a result of it. They're really good about following through on the total health situation there, and good about warning us about things that go wrong. And for him, his side effects from the Lupron has been more just the emotional, like premenstrual type behavior of impatience and that type of thing, which was totally foreign because he was the most patient person I'd ever seen in my life. And then the little bit of a tummy and a little bit of the boobies. But other than that, he's been really blessed to not have a lot of other side effects that some of the men get.
Well, that's good. All right,
if
I could get him off it.
And again, appreciate the information and the entertainment every Saturday.
All right, thank you for the call, young lady.
What was your question, Tim?
Ask him what he thinks about that. What's that called? Is that one?
The darolutamide?
No, the one you asked. Steel or something.
No, I don't.
It's in Seattle.
No. Greece. No. Okay, well, we need to let you go so you can get on with the... Johns there.
There we go. We're going to go to First John next.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye-bye, dear.
Thank you so much, Nancy. All right. And if you do think of another question, feel free to give us a call right back. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We've got John on the line back from Whidbey, and I hear you've got a nice, clear connection this time.
Well, I hope so.
And oh, yes.
Yes,
it's
you
the
do.
Second time you could call me Third John, but...
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, I have a microadenoma on my pituitary gland.
Uh-huh.
A little history. I'm 76, retired Navy guy. I had my testosterone checked last year. It was elevated. I had it rechecked. It's still high, but not as high. And my FSH and LH are also elevated.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor referred me to an endocrinologist and a neurologist, so I think I'm on the right path. Most of what I've read about adenomas talks about hormone deficiencies, and my hormones are elevated. So I'm just hoping you can educate me a tad.
Okay, well, microadenomas of the pituitary can go either way. Well, all three ways, actually. Most of them are found as an incidental finding. They're looking for something else, and they just see this little mass on the pituitary. And so many of them have no impact at all that we can see. They don't rise, they don't fall. But sometimes, if they're big enough, they will interfere with the pituitary's ability to make luteinizing and follicle stimulating hormone, and that then can result in low hormone production. But other times, as in the case with you, they actually raise FSH and LH, and now your glands are producing more hormone than they're supposed to. And so it can go either way. Now, the general situation with older men, of course, is that their androgen load is very low, and yours is not. That just means we don't have to give you extra testosterone and dehydroepiandrosterone, so you should be making plenty of your own. The question is, at what point does the microadenoma become a big enough issue that you need to go in and do something about it? You know, if they go in and excise most of the pituitary, then you end up dependent on your doctors to give you all of your hormones from that day forth because you become incapable of producing your own. So most of the time, doctors are not in a big rush to go in and ablate these hormones or ablate this tumor.
And,
because the tumor, taking it out is going to cause some significant medical problems for the rest of your life.
I'm just curious how they found his. Were they looking for something else, and was it an incidental finding, or did your symptoms prompt the investigation?
I just decided an annual physical to have my testosterone checked. And it no symptoms that I can, well, I may have symptoms, but I don't, you know, there was no reason. Just, let's check my testosterone.
Just check
too. And it was a little over 900, and they rechecked it, and it was 891. And then more lab studies, and got the other two hormones. And then, well, you need to have an MRI. Let's check your pituitary gland, and that's where I am right now.
Well, those hormone levels are perfectly normal for a 25-year-old, and so.
Well, that's good.
I mean, at this point, if that's all that is amiss, I'd have no special worries. I'd want to keep tabs on it, obviously, because you do have a little tumor up there that is causing you to make more hormone than is normal for your age, but it's actually normal for a much younger, healthier man. So If that's the only impact of the tumor, I'm not at all concerned.
What other symptoms might I have that I'm not connecting it to this?
Well, and what you need is not just a testosterone. You need a full hormone panel. We need to be looking at your dehydroepiandrosterone, your pregnenolone, your progesterone, your estradiol, your testosterone, your growth hormone levels, too. Because that's also triggered by pituitary function. So, you know, I can think of seven or eight hormones I'd want checked, also your thyroid function. So right offhand, I can think of eight different hormones you ought to have checked and followed. But if they're all in a healthy 25-year-old range, I'm just going to say, you know, praise the Lord, pass the ammunition and keep on moving, bud.
You know, the classic way we pick up pituitary microadenomas is when they grow big enough and they impact on vision. People start presenting with visual symptoms, and that's when they go, oh, yeah, let's go look, and they find it. And then you have to do something.
A field cut. Because the optic nerves cross right over the pituitary. And if the microadenoma turns into a full-sized adenoma, it's no longer micro. It now becomes something, a macroadenoma, then it can impinge on those optic nerves. And then you get what we call a field cut. And usually it would be the outside range of your vision on both sides at the same time would start to diminish. So, and that would be picked up with your ophthalmologist, who's doing your field of vision studies each year.
Well, there hasn't been anything detected yet, so I guess this is all good. I did have hyperthyroidism back in the early 80s. My thyroid grew to about twice normal size, and I was treated with PTUs. And, you know, varying doses, and got my thyroid back to normal, and I haven't had a problem since then. Could that be connected, or just not that far apart, because that was in the 80s, early 80s.
Well, again, that would be looking at your thyroid-stimulating hormone, which is, again, a pituitary hypothalamic axis issue. So if your pituitary-stimulating or if your thyroid-stimulating hormone were to rise significantly, that indeed could be have been an early sign of your microadenoma.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess. Well, thank you. I love listening to you guys on Saturday morning. I'll make sure when I see the endocrinologist, he does a full hormone study and thyroid as well.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and let them know about this 20-year-ago history of the hyperthyroidism.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's 40-year-old history, but yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you for that, Sean. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. Good luck.
This is Leading Edge Medicine. Thank you for that call, John. With Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon, we're going from 1 John now to 2 John. Another John, this time from Steilacoom. Hi there, John.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you for letting us tease you just a bit.
Oh, sure. I have peripheral neuropathy and ankylosing spondylitis.
Oops.
That causes pain in lower legs and feet, and wondering if your doctors have any suggestions.
Well, I mean,
change your genome so you don't get ankylosing spondylitis.
That's a tough one, you know.
Yes, it is.
Autoimmune disease, yeah. But, Jerry, I do find, I mean, we can't cure it.
No.
But I do find that the anabolic hormones help. Especially testosterone in men, it just helps build muscle, maintain muscle. Mobility is a big factor, and that is compromised here.
Yeah, well, and the peripheral neuropathy. Can you be a little more specific about your peripheral neuropathy? Tell us, what are your symptoms? What can you not feel? What can you feel? You know, do you keep heat and cold? Is your muscle function still okay, or does it just feel numb and tingly? Does it feel like you've got socks on all the time? What's the details of that peripheral neuropathy?
I think all of the above. And the tingling and the pain and standing is quite an issue.
Okay. Yeah, if you're getting pain, you know, that's different from tingling. If all you're getting is a little tingling, we don't get terribly excited about it. But this makes me wonder how much your ankylosing spondylitis might be impinging on your spinal cord and hitting something on that track.
Sure.
You know, you need to see somebody that's really, really a first-rate neurologist and an orthopedist to take a look at this for you.
Or a physical medicine and rehab specialist.
Yeah.
They'll be good at doing a good full exam and to see how they can help.
Okay, good, yeah.
So, okay, I'll give those a shot.
All right, yeah, because you know, nothing we can do is going to fix your underlying problem.
Correct. And you do need to optimize the care that you can get for the underlying problem first.
Right. We may be able to help some of the symptoms to make you feel and function a bit better.
Right.
But we are not capable
of. That's what I was hoping, yes.
Yeah, but we aren't capable of fixing the underlying problem, and that's where you need the neurologist, the orthopedist, and the physical medicine doctor, the physiatrist.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check out some of those.
All right.
All right. And good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Tough problem.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Some tough questions today.
Yes.
Yeah, a big variety today.
Yeah.
And maybe time for one more call at 1-800-465-8770. But let's put a little plug in here. Dr. Dan Nelson was here last week.
Yes, he was.
And he wanted to let us know and invite our listeners to the sacroiliac joint. You know what that is, right, doctors?
Joint.
It's actually a virtual seminar focusing on the sacroiliac, and that's happening on Thursday, which is Leap Year Day.
That's right, the 29th.
Yeah, we only get that every 4 years. So Thursday, February 29th at 6 p.m., and that is with Dr. Dan Nelson from Pro Ortho. We call him the pain doctor. He was our guest last week, and he'll be joined by orthopedic spine surgeon Dr. Scott Price. So if you go to Dr. Dan Nelson's website, you'll get information on how you can see this virtual seminar, otherwise called a webinar, and you can see that right on your computer or your phone, right in the comfort of your home. So Dr. Nelson's web address is danielnelsonmd.com. That's danielnelsonmd.com. Just wanted to make sure that you had that information. That was from last week. And we have just a few minutes left of our show today.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Umat, what is new? What's going on at our clinics?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a little bit of a buzz because we did doctor's rounds, and Dr. Mixon was all enthused about the thymus and about so many other things that, you know, are new in this area and how we can help patients reduce the likelihood of infections as they get older. Mm-hmm. And that just permeated through all the team, and everybody's like, okay, the next big thing, you know, we talked more about rapamycin, which we've talked about, the senescent cell therapies, and now we've been doing so long now.
Yes.
It's not new for us anymore.
No.
Anymore, the rest of the world still thinks it's brand new. But yeah.
Our patients have been on the program for many times and repeated the series of therapies for a time now, and they're doing well. So happy to report that. Mm-hmm. But the thymus, Jerry, you want to say a few words about that and infection?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the thymus is a gland that is very large when we're born. It's a great big gland, upper chest, above and in front of the heart. And it is generating the immune cells that you will use the rest of your life. Hmm. It makes both the B cells and the T cells. And it's fascinating because those cells last decades. Hmm. And then the thymus starts to shrink before adolescence. And by the time you're a teenager, it's a tiny fraction of its previous size. And by the time you're an adult, you can't even find it except on a sensitive MRI. It is just atrophied and almost totally gone away.
Wow.
The consequence of that is, though, that we are using the immune cells that we developed in childhood for the rest of our lives. And so every time we get an infection, every time we're attacked by either a new malignant cell trying to start a cancer, or when we got our measles, our mumps, when we get all of our vaccines, we're actually using up those memory cells, those immune cells. And once we make them sensitive to a particular bacteria or virus, they don't respond to any other bacteria or virus. So by the time most people are about 50, about 97-98% of all their immune cells have already been consumed by protecting them in their life up till that point. And that's why over 50, people start getting more cancers. They start getting worse infections, and that's where you start dying of the flu and the COVID, etc. By the time you're 70-75, you have a tiny fraction of your immune cells left. And that, of course, is why once more COVID and now the flu kills a lot of older people. Well, we now have a research group down by Stanford that is coming up with some new protocols to regrow the thymus and start kicking out those immune cells again in late life as though you were a kid.
Wow.
Making new immune cells that will then help protect you against infections and cancers for another 20, 30, 40 years.
Wow.
And I mean, that's, I think, is the next big thing. 26 years ago, it was the hormone therapy, and it has been really important for a lot of people. But this is the thing that usually ends up killing old people.
Sure. Okay.
And if we can really regenerate that thymus and get folks to have back the immune system that they had 30, 40, 50 years ago, we can extend human lifespan dramatically.
Wow. We may have to come back to this next week on our show. Mm-hmm. I love this. Good questions. Great interaction. So much information. Thank you for joining us on Leading Edge Medicine today, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. And we still are offering our health analysis appointments for you. And you can make that by calling us at 866-86-YOUNG. Just a couple of tests to find out what you're at risk for. And we have three clinics, of course, in Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. All right, we hope to hear from you. And check out our website, lmclinic.com. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next time on Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your day.